If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Thank you. You've been listening to Shred Is Dead and their instrumental take on The Grateful Dead's Unbroken Chain, live from Nectar's in Vermont, November 22nd, 2019. Marcus Rezac is a classic rock and roll cowboy, a man out on the plains, a gunslinger, well, in this case, guitar slinger, with dreams, ambitions, and tons of talent. You know his name because of all the guest appearances he does on the jam band scene, most notably with Umphrey's McGee. Aside from being an artist at large, Rezac also fronts Shred Is Dead, a Grateful Dead tribute band, and is a member of Digital Tape Machine and many other, well, baby bands. He does, however, take time to carve out solo records, as he did in 2018 with Gateway to the Galaxy. He just released his sophomore follow-up to that record, a four-song, 30-minute EP, Truth in Sound, which absolutely needs to be heard. I caught up with Marcus, who always seems to be on the road doing something. Our conversation started when I asked how Truth and Sound, featuring members of the Trey Anastasio Band, came to be.
It doesn't get much better than this rhythm section, especially one that I've been listening to since I was a young man, you know. And it came together basically through a first gig that happened with Russ and I at Nectar's in Burlington. And it was a Shred Is Dead show. And it was my first time playing at Nectar's, actually, but we made that happen, and it was with Gub from Twiddle, as well as Scott Hanay on keys, and I think we had Haley Jane sit in as well that night, and it was great, and we hit it off. I mean, Russ and I kind of connected really well, and it felt really organic and natural, and, you know, the best way I can describe it as it felt like we've been playing together for years, even though it's like the first time. So that sort of led to me, you know, thinking and, you know, dreaming up my next album project and thinking about how I can, you know, always step it up a notch for myself and for everyone else. And I just talked to Russ and we talked about the idea of having Tony and Ray as well, and he reached out to them on my behalf and showed them the demos and, you know, I think told them about our experience playing live together, and they were all willing to be a part of this project. And I was so unbelievably fortunate and lucky, and now even more than ever grateful that to have Tony and Russ in there at the same time with me tracking all the songs together, all three of us. So it really does have that authentic, organic, live feel on the improvs and jam sections, as well as the songs themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to mention Tony, because the album came out last Friday, and Tony passed, I guess, last Thursday night or last Friday morning. Talk to me a bit about Tony, because we haven't really discussed him with anybody yet. I've never met him, but all indications are he was not only an amazing player, but an amazing person.
Definitely. No doubt about that. You know, when we first met that day at the studio, he was extremely nice and extremely focused on making the music sound as good as possible, which I, you know, immediately was so happy about, and actually what I was hoping for and expected, you know, from what I heard too, leading up to that. He was really into going over the songs before we started recording them, dissecting things, making sure parts fit well, the grooves fit right. And he really liked to talk things out beforehand and cared so much about the songs being as good as they could possibly be. And, you know, aside from that, he's just a sweet, gentle soul and, you know, a total pro. He knew exactly everything that needed to happen to make everything work well. You know, he even stayed later in the day than we had scheduled to do some extra overdubs and things to make it perfectly gel the way that he wanted it to sound. And I quote him by saying, "I want this to have the strut." And he always talked about the strut. So the strut of the groove, and that, you know, we all know he had the deepest groove of almost any bass player ever. And, you know, he put that extra effort in for me and that time and that care. And I think a lot of people know that about him, that he just always gave as much of himself as possible. And, you know, made me feel really at ease, you know, doing the session together, because obviously going into that, you know, you don't know what's going to exactly happen, but you have expectations and hopes. And it really did come to light the way that I was hoping for and more. So, I mean, Tony made it all gel, you know, he made it feel right and he made it feel comfortable. So
that's great. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, sad. I'm really sad, sorely, you know, I'm sore inside from knowing he's not going to be around anymore, to play and just to be around. But the fact that we got to make this record, and, you know, that I feel like to carry on his legacy and to carry on his sound is the way I'm looking at this, and to, you know, honor him and carry on, which is what I think he would want.
I agree wholeheartedly. What I found really interesting about this EP is that it's way more accessible, and it could be, I don't know if it was on purpose or if it was just the way these songs came out, but I found all four of these songs, even the instrumental, to be way more accessible than Gateway to the Galaxy. Is that because of the groove, because of the songs that you put together, or was that something that you specifically set out to do?
This one was, you know, when I set out to write these songs, it was coming from a different place than Gateway of the Galaxy. It was coming from a side of me that is more of a songwriter and more of a, you know, a groove player than on Gateway of the Galaxy, which is a little more jazz fusion, progressive, I guess. Yeah. I would say, mm-hmm. If I had to. But this record is definitely centered around conveying the lyrical elements in the music, and connected wholeheartedly to the lyrics, I would say, with having some sort of irony between light and dark, as the lyrics can send you different messages and the music can send you another message, you know. So I did focus on trying to make it more of a groove thing in general, I guess you could say, not necessarily poppy or more accessible, but
right.
I'm glad it is accessible to people, because I want people to hear it and interpret it, and not be like freaked out that it's some crazy jazz shredding stuff that most people aren't able to digest, but in a nice, comfortable groove, you know. And especially with the groove masters, Russ and Tony and Ray, you know, it was what I was looking to do, you know, and accomplish with this one. And I wanted it to be something people could dance to, you know, something people can just hang out and listen to, you know, without having to like really like like listen to every single part. You know, it's Galaxy was more of a record that was like coming from a different place. As like I said, you know, this one is coming from another place.
Love and celebrating connection is a big part of this record, whether it's celebrating their love of music or celebrating love in a relationship. I'm talking about Light of the Moon, of course, and Borderline. You feel that. I think you feel that, even though, you know, you're only in this studio for probably a couple days with these guys. Not only does it come through in the lyrics, but it certainly comes through, that sentiment certainly comes into the love of playing on the record. How quickly did you gel with these people? I mean, you spoke about your relationship with Ross and Russ, sorry, and how quickly you got along with him, and obviously how great Tony was. But talk to me a bit about all four of the other band members, including Ray and Kallion, and coming together and really loving the project.
Yeah, it came together quickly. It came together quickly, starting with Russ and then Tony, and then Ray, and then Kallion. You know, Kallion and I have known each other a long time through being from Chicago and playing on various different live settings together. But, you know, I immediately felt the connection with Russ and Tony together in the studio. It was magic. It was the feeling that I have always imagined, you know, and the way that we fleshed out the tunes, you know, we actually recorded four songs in one day, believe it or not.
Wow.
And it just was happening so fast, you know, and I only wish I had booked more days with them and that they had the time, because obviously they're busy guys, you know. And it just happened really smoothly and organically. And we just wanted to do, you know, more. I think all the guys we were talking about getting back together and recording more stuff, and they're so happy I have more songs to do and stuff like that for the next album and everything. But you know, I think I'm trying to get to your question exactly here. You know, and Ray came along and did his overdubs later on when he was able to. And since we had that foundation down already, he felt very comfortable. And with Kallion, you know, he laid it all down after we had our stuff done, and it just kind of gelled very easily. And we are really looking forward to playing together live, you know, and hopefully we still will, you know. It won't be the same without Tony, but yeah, we will, you know, hopefully still play some shows. We had some shows booked for last year, actually.
I'm curious about, because you are a guy who, it's you and then guns for hire when you go into a studio to make a record, do you have all of this stuff written out and prepared for the guys? And is it just a case of them interpreting what you've put down on paper and you hearing it back and figuring out, you know, does that sound right? Should we vamp up a little more? Should we do a little more with this? I mean, you have the basis of the song, and does everybody sort of add to what's already on paper?
Yes, I have it all written out before coming into the studio with them.
Yeah.
I do all the pre-production and composing and everything beforehand. I come in with charts written out, and everything is prepared as possible so that there's as little guesswork as possible and only time to enhance and optimize certain things. And that's pretty much what we did there. You know, we all sat in the room together before recording and sat in a circle and looked over the tunes and the charts. And Tony and Russ both had suggestions about certain spots, and we made those adjustments to make it sound better and include their wisdom. That's pretty much how it usually goes when I go into a session with other players. I always have it ready to go and stuff like that. Unless, you know, it's a certain different type of scenario where we're all kind of, you know, a group, it's a group band, you know, and we're all writing together and stuff. But I presented these tunes to them, and then we went in and made them come alive, I would say.
One person who we didn't mention is Joe Hatinga, who mixed all of your guitar tracks at Third Coast Recording Company, but he also plays keys, right? On Borderline, is that right?
Yeah, so Joe Hatinga and I go way back. We were in Digital Tape Machine together. He mixed and engineered Gateway to the Galaxy as well. And I love working with him. He's one of my favorite people. On this record, Truth and Sound, he was with me most of the time, and he engineered and mixed all the tracks, not just the guitar, pretty much. He pretty much did all the mixing. When we tracked, we were at, you know, Tank Recording Studio, and Ben Collette was there and doing all the engineering there and all the tracking there. But Joe and I took those, went back to Grand Haven, Michigan, where he lives, to do all the guitar recordings and make thing there. Joe used to work at Third Coast. Now I think he's independent. So just so we know that, he's out there doing his thing. And but that is sort of, yeah, how it all kind of works. And Joe is a mastermind of mixing and audio and also playing piano for sure. He did play piano on Borderline and did an amazing thing over the whole tune, but in the solo section he really played some nice stuff.
The instrumental at the end is probably, for me at least, the highlight, because it bridges the gap between Gateway to the Galaxy and this new record, I think. I'm talking, of course, about Glitter Pillow.
Mm-hmm.
it's progressive rock, but it's funk, sure, and it's jazz, and there's this really cool thing. The solo section is absolutely funk, and that clav is going crazy. Thank you, Ray. That clav is going crazy, and so is your guitar solo.
Yeah.
Do you hear all of these parts in your head when you're writing it down, or do you play all of these parts first, like when you're preparing the demos? I'm just curious because I can't imagine all of these sounds coming together in my head and sounding so right away.
That's, I think, an overwhelming thought for a lot of songwriters and composers until they get the hang of it and get the hang of their style of doing it, you know. And for me, I like to, you know, kind of make a big outline and fill it in, you know. So not necessarily every single thing is thought out and planned and expected to go in that way, because as soon as I put it in the player's hands, they're going to do their thing, and that's what I want to happen. So I will compose the harmony, the melodies, the form of the song, the arrangement, you know, the spots where solos are going to happen, who's going to solo where. You know, and the type of stylistic feel changes that will happen in the song. So that stuff's like mapped out, but you know, I didn't write out Ray's, you know, clap part. I was just like, all right, here's this section, do your thing, man. You know, and that's kind of what I said to all the guys, and mostly aside from what I had already pre-written and recorded for them to hear. That's usually my goal, is always to let the players do their thing, because that's what they're best at. That Glitter Pillow is like what you're saying, sort of that continuation of Gate of the Galaxy, because it's, you know, I do so many different things and this and that, and I knew some people would just want like a nice raw instrumental rager. So that's sort of the thought on that.
Yeah, no, it makes a ton of sense. For a guy who is in several bands and appears all over the place with guest spots, this must have been a really difficult year for you, not being able to tour and being able to join friends up on stage, right?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, that part of it has been rough. You know, I got to say, it's been weird not being able to be traveling like we were doing and doing everything full steam. But on the other hand, I have really not relented on my grind and my hustle. I still was doing some traveling and some gigs around Colorado and other states. You know, in St. John, I did a few shows there, in Vermont, and Chicago and stuff. And, you know, I'm not the type to really kind of sit there and do nothing ever, you know. So I found my spots. I started teaching a lot again. I finished doing this record. You know, I found where people were doing safe shows, you know, and doing participating in all those. And I just kind of kept going and doing my thing where I could safely. And, you know, it was definitely a time of strangeness, but also I'm really proud of my team and everyone for carving out the certain spots where we could do shows and we could do things and go travel to finish mixing this record. And we even did, you know, a lot of mixing over Zoom, to be honest with you, towards the later months. Like we would be both on two different apps where you could hear the audio and see the video in real time and, you know, working that way. So we kind of adapted and made some pandemic pivots and, you know, tried to make the most of it as best as possible.
What's up next for you? I mean, you're always busy. What's the plan moving forward for the next couple months and over this summer and spring?
Yeah, well, we are booking right now. We're filling in a bunch of dates. I'm going to be starting another album this year. I've got a bunch of songs ready to go again. I've got the Mishawaka Amphitheater, May 21st with Shred is Dead, and Eminence Ensemble. And we're going to be doing that. Summer Camp Music Festival is scheduled. We've got a bunch of runs scattered throughout the country, West Coast, East Coast, stuff happening down in Austin, Texas. We were just there. I just did two nights with Sean Martin and Spot from Snarky Puppy there. Just filling in more festivals and more stuff like that. And, you know, that's the plan. Hopefully a couple of acoustic duo tours that'll be exciting with some guests. You know, I'm always trying to work on doing some crazy stuff. You know, who knows, maybe an old school digital tape machine reunion could be in the books. Who knows? You know, we're doing all kinds of different things, but making records, playing with other artists. Hopefully, you know, we'll be back at Jam Cruise this next year if it happens again. I had a great time last year. You know, all the good things we're trying to do.
Cool. Well, thanks for taking the time and thanks for Truth and Sound. It is a great album, EP, 4-song machine. And thank you for sharing your moments with Tony and the rest of the gang. And we'll talk real soon, all right?
Thanks, Ira. It was awesome talking to you as always, man. Appreciate you.
For more on Marcus Rezac, visit MarcusRezac.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another track off of Truth and Sound. Here is Glitter Pillow. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.